Today's shiur, Maseches Sanhedrin, Daf Chof Gimel. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Masech. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. We turn to the Mishnah, which is at the beginning of a new perek, the third perek of Sanhedrin here on Daf Chof Gimel. Before we actually continue in the reading, let us glance at the outside margin. We have a Mivneh heading, a structural note, which features the diamond, which is one of our series markings. As you know from our introductory material, all the geometric forms in our marking system represent a series of whatever. And in this case, we see the Mivneh, this diamond featured, Gimel, Machlekes, Rabbi Meir, the Chachamim. 3 points of controversy in this Mishnah between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. As you skim down the Mishnah, you'll see 3 diamonds, and next, near each one, you'll notice we've underlined the names Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. So we'll see 3 points of controversy. The Mishnah begins, Dine Momenus Bishlosha. This is actually a quote from the very beginning of our Masechet, where the name of that perek, in fact, was Dine Momenus Bishlosha. Very often, the name of a perek is the first few words of the Mishnah. In this particular case, interestingly enough, the Mishnah is not referred to by the opening words. Those opening words of Dine Momenus Bishlosha were found in the first perek. In fact, we can't say there's any consistent rule about naming of prokim, because there are prokim that are found, in fact, next to each other, whereby the beginning of both prokim have the same beginning words, and they actually received the same name, almost. In this case, the name of this perek is reserved for the following words of the Mishnah. So after saying that Dine Momenus, rules of monetary matters, are covered by 3 judges, courts of 3, how are these courts formed? Ze borer lo echad. The ze borer lo echad. At this point in the Gemara, we're going to work with a certain assumption, and then in the course of the Gemara itself, we'll see this assumption being changed. But the first ze borer means that you have two litigants. One is trying to collect money from the next party. A claims that B owes him money, so A chooses Echad, and the assumption right now is that means one basin, which would be 3 people. Veze borer lo Echad, if A chose the first, now B chooses the second basin, would be another basin, another 3. Ushneim borer lohen od Echad, and the 2 of them, A and B, would choose a 3rd basin. Divrei Rabbi Meir. At this point in the Gemara, it would come out to a total of 9 people. The Gemara itself will ask about this assumption. Continuing, though, V'chomim orim, Shnei Dayonin borin lohen oid echad. And following along the lines of the current assumption, the difference between Rabbi Meir and the Chacham is the 3rd stage of choosing would be not by the 2 litigants, as Rabbi Meir claimed, but the 2 courts. That's the Shnei Dayonim would be a reference at this point to the 2 courts that were already chosen, would choose the 3rd court. Ze poisel dayonoi shel ze, veze poisel dayonoi shel ze, divrei Rabbi Meir. This expression of ze poisel dayonoi shel ze, Rashi explains further down the page in a Rashi that in fact is out of place, but it's nevertheless found the lower part of the page. It really belongs here on the Mishnah. Rashi says, Zeh poisel dayonoi shel zeh, vezeh poisel dayonoi shel zeh, yochol lomar lo, lo adun lefanov. That the one litigant can tell the other, I don't want to be judged in front of this particular judge. Hence the word, what Rashi has done for us, is shown that we don't translate the word posel literally, but rather understand it to mean that each party can say, I don't want to be judged by this particular judge or court. So let's read this again. Ze poisel dayono shalze, ze poisel dayono shalze, divrei Rabbi Meir. V'chachomim omrim, the chachomim disagree. Emosai, when is it that one can refuse to be judged by so-and-so? Bizman, shemevi alein raya shenkroivin opsulin. Only in the event that they can bring proof that the that there's a level of relationship, they are relatives, or unfit for judging. Aval im hoyu ksherin. If, however, the judges in question were acceptable, oy mumchin mepi beisdin, or they are of an expert caliber, eino yochol poslan. Continuing, ze posel edov shelzev, ze posel edov shelzev, divrei Rabbi Meir. Literally, means each side can render unfit the witnesses of the other. V'chachomim umrim emosai, when can a litigant rule or cause witnesses to be unfit? Bizman shemevi alein raya shen kroven opsulin, only in the event that he can bring proof that they are either relatives or unfit for serving as witnesses. Aval im hoyuk sherin, if however they are kosher people, eino yochol lefoslan, then a litigant cannot render unfit the other party's witnesses. The Gemara now turns to the opening of the Mishnah, and we already introduced the problem in terms of the number of people sitting in judgment according to the opening of the Mishnah. Mai ze borer lo echad veze borer lo echad. What is the meaning of that? And we saw Rashi, we made reference to it, to Rashi that says at the top that the mashmos of echad meant a bezin, and a bezin is three. And if we do the arithmetic like we did at the opening of the Mishnah, it came out there were nine people sitting in judgment, and hence the Gemara asks, but Tlosa Sagi, three would be enough. So the Gemara answers, Hachi Ko'omar. Before we go further in the Gemara, we must take note of our markings. We have a new geometric form here, namely, we have a house marking. Just like all the geometric forms in our system, there is no inherent significance to any given form. All it is designed to do is to connect a particular point up with something later on. In this case, we have a Mivneh heading, and we'll notice that in the outside margin. The house form is featured. Shnei Hesberim Lemasnisin. We're going to see two explanations to the Mishnah, which opened up with Ze Borlo Echad. So here we go with the first. Hochi Komar. Kesheze Borer Lo based in Echad. Veze Borer Lo based in Echad. Shnehem borin lohen oid echad. We've treated the following, these two lines that we just read in a frame, even though this isn't an actual Tanaic source, this nevertheless is the understanding of the Tanaic source. And the understanding is as follows, that when one litigant chooses a bezin, the other litigant might choose an alternative bezin, and what comes out of the Mishnah is that no one litigant can force the other to be judged by his basin, and if there is a difference of opinion between the two litigants in front of whom they want to be judged, they will not be judged until they choose a basin together. According to what we just said, let us take as an example a malva and a lova, a lender and a borrower. According to what we just said, we have a situation where a borrower can actually refuse to be judged in the presence of the beis din chosen by the lender. And that doesn't conform to conventional understanding of things. The Gemara asks, "V'afilu loive motzi makev," and even the borrower is able to impose his will. The ha omar Rav Elazar lo shanu ela malve. This concept of one being able to force another, that is only if it's the malva who is imposing his will, the lender, avaloive. But when dealing with the borrower, koifen oisoi vidon biro, we impose upon him or force him, and he must conform to the desires of the malva to be judged in his city and not be able, namely the lova is not able to insist on taking the course to a base va, to let us say, to central location. The Rashi makes a reference to this issue that's introduced by the Gemara that said Lo Shanu, and he says Lo Shanu Echad Omar Nidol Kan VeEchad Omar Nelech LeBeis Havad. One party says, "Let us be judged here locally," and the other one says, "Let us go to a central location, a Beis Vad, an established court." We can force the one that says he wants to go to the Beis Vad to go there. And the Gemara points out right now that is only in the case that the lender is the one that says he wants to go to the Beis Vad, to the established court. However, the Lova, he cannot insist on that. And if the Malva wants to be judged locally, the Lova must cooperate. Therefore, according to the Gemara's first answer, we're having trouble understanding how is it that the borrower also has a say. To answer this, we have a couple of approaches. Number one, Kidom Rabbi Yochanan, as Rabbi Yochanan said elsewhere, Be'erkois Shebesuria Shanu, Mochanami Be'erkois Shebesuria Shanu. The term Erkos Shebesuria, Rashi says, Shelohoyu Bikin Bedin Torah. These are unofficial courts or non-professional courts in Surya. And as a result of their non-expertise in Din Torah, Rashi continues, Hilkach Afilu Lova Motzi Makev. Since we're dealing with the case of a Malva insisting upon an unprofessional court handling the case, the Lova, the borrower, can say, "I don't want to be judged by them." And in such a case, he does have a say. Avol Mumchin Lo. The Gemara continues by saying, but if we were dealing with professional courts that are expert in Torah law, the Lova would not have any say. Number two, Rav Papa Omar, Afilu Tema Mumchin. One might suggest, even in the case where dealing with professional courts, there is a situation that the Lova would be able to impose his will. Kegon Beidino de Rav Huna u de Rav Chisda. Given a case where you have two professional courts that are located in the same town, the Ka'omar Le, the Lova, can say to the Malva, Mi Kom Matrachno Loch, am I troubling you? Namely, since the court I want to go to, says the borrower, is in the same vicinity as you are located, I am not imposing upon you any trouble by insisting on going to my chosen court. And with this, we can, as Rav Papa explains, we can offer a second understanding of how to understand our Mishnah, whereby both the Malva and the Lova can each one impose their own desire, one on the other, and hence we understand the Mishnah that they are not going to be judged in such a case unless they choose a court together. Tanan. The Chachomim Omrim, Shnei Dayonin Borin Lohen Oid Echad. The continuation of our Mishnah says that the opinion of the Chachomim is that the third entity, up till now we've explained it means the third court, is chosen by the first two courts. However, this whole explanation of explaining the term echod as referring to a court is now going to come under question. If you are to think like we explained, based in other words, when turning to the first line of the Mishnah, ze borlo echod, and according to our current explanation meant this one chooses one, namely one court. Namely, we can say the lender chooses a court, and then we said the borrower may choose his own court that he prefers. And then we said that the case won't be handled until the two litigants choose together a third court. But if you're going to adopt this explanation that the expression in the Mishnah, Echad, is referring to a court, how are we to understand this section of the Mishnah? The Chachomim said that Shnei Dayonin Borin Orechot, Beisdin, Boser de Pastli Lahu, a Beisdin, and according to the explanation we gave for a mayor, was that the two courts would choose a third court. Let us correct ourselves there, that according to the Chachamim, if we're interpreting the Mishnah to refer to courts, it would come out that the two courts would choose the third court. But how could that be? Based in Boser de Pastli Lahu, a basin after they were rejected, Azlu Ubirlu Beidino Achrini, could it be that after they have been rejected would then come back into the picture and choose the third court? That would seem to be quite unreasonable. The Oid, and a further objection, my ze borer lo echod, ze borer lo echod. From that expression, it would seem that there is an insistence on this one choosing one and this one choosing one, namely that they're chayev, that each one is chayev to choose one. But according to our explanation, it didn't mean that at all. It meant that if one does not want to be judged by a particular court, then he can insist on being judged by another. But not as a given requirement, but when you read the words of the Mishnah, it is presented as a given requirement. Namely, this one chooses one, and this one must choose one. Hello, hachi komar. Rather, we must understand the Mishnah thusly. Ze borer lo dayon echod, veze borer lo dayon echod. Each litigant chooses one judge. Shnehem borin lohen od echod, and the two litigants together choose a third dayon. With this answer, we avoid all of the mathematical problems that we encountered above. Namely, we're choosing singular dayonim, not courts. And we also account for the fact that the expression ze borer lo is a requirement because we have to get up to three. So each one must choose one, and together they choose a third individual. My shno de avdi hochi, what is significant or what is important in that it is done like this? Amri b'amorim ishmei de Rabbi Zeira. It has been said in Eretz Yisrael in the name of Rabbi Zeira, mitoch sheze borolo dayon echod, veze borolo dayon echod, from through that which each party chooses a singular judge, ushne borolin od echod, and the two of them together choose the third judge, yetze hadin la'mito. Rashi explains this expression, yetze din la'emes la'mito, detzaisi bale dinin. The litigants will heed the court ruling. The savar hachayav, even the one who is found to be guilty or obligated to pay, he will figure, hare ani ba'atzmi birarti ho echod. I chose one of the judges. V'im hoyo yochol apich b'zichusi hoyim apich. And if he could have found something, some point of merit for me to win the case, he certainly would have done so. And since I was found guilty, apparently there was no merit to be found in my defense. Hence, I will cooperate. V'hadayon ba'atzmam noyche da'iton ma'afoich b'zichus shneihem b'nei sheshneihem birurum. And the judges themselves will be more amenable to trying to find the merits for both sides. After all, both parties were responsible for their choosing. The Chachamim said that the third judge is chosen not by the litigants, but by the first two judges. The two judges that were chosen by litigants, the judges choose the third. The Gemara raises a suggestion, and we can see that this Gemara will appear in a couple of stages, and that's defined, or that's illustrated by our double underline. Notice we have namal, and then a few lines later, the word lo is double underline. These are two stages in trying to understand the machloikis between Rebbe Meir and the Chachamim. And we also indicate with the use of triangles these stages as well. We can see the comment made on the outside margin, nosei mivneh, the triangle is featured. Hesberim lemachlokes Rabbi Meir Chachomim beinyan bechiras dayan hashlishi. We're going to try to explain the point of difference between Rabbi Meir Chachomim regarding the choice of the third judge. Hence, the Gemara continues. Neimo b'Rav Yehuda Amarav komifligi. Can we say that the machlokes between Rabbi Meir Chachomim is based on Rav's teaching? The Yom Avidam Rav. Ein ho edim choismal ashtar elam kein yoidin mi choisem imohem. Rav teaches that witnesses do not sign documents unless they know who is signing along with them. Let's glance at Rashi for this. Rashi says, Elohim kein yoidin mi choisem imohem, shema yechtamu imohem eid echot pasol. If someone signs a document and the one who signs along with them to constitute the second witness, in which we know that you need two witnesses to establish halacha, to establish law, and imagine the second guy is posel, is unfit, umevatel edus kulam v'nimsu elu boishim. If you have a group of witnesses, even if you have more than two witnesses that are signing a document, but they're signing together as a single group, as a single entity, namely an entity of witnesses, if one of them is found to be unfit, based on Ikur Hadin, it renders them all posel. Hence, Rav Yehuda Amar Rav has a rule that witnesses do not sign documents unless they know who is with them. Rabbi Meir, the Gemara goes on, Rabbi Meir said that the third judge is not chosen by the judges, it's chosen by the litigants. It might be argued, Rabbi Meir less later, Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, that Rabbi Meir doesn't subscribe to Rav's teaching, where Rav taught that the witnesses must know who is signing with them. Rabbi Meir didn't seem to be so concerned that the judges know who is sitting with them in judgment. V'Rabbanan, the Rabbanan who required the third judge to be chosen by the other two judges, is l'hu Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, whereby the Rabbanan would parallel the din, the law concerning judges, to the din concerning witnesses. Just like by witnesses, there's an insistence that they all know of one another. So too, in the cases of the judges, they must know one of the other. Gemara says, lo, we don't have to set up Rav as being the subject of a Tanaic controversy. Rather, the Kuli Alma Islihud Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Vidas Hadayonim Kuli Alma Lo Pligi De Bo'inon. Everyone, namely Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, all subscribe to Rav's teaching, that the basic Rav teaching was that the witnesses must know who is signing with them, and as a result of that, so too in the case of judges, all the judges must know who is together with them. So concerning the choice of the third judge, it is certainly important that the first two judges are aware or party to his choice, to the choice of the third Dayan. Ki pligi, when, at what point does this controversy arrive between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim? Das bale dinim. Is there a necessity of having the knowledge and the consent of the litigants? Rabbi Meir Sovardas Bale Dinim Nami Boina. Rabbi Meir is more extreme, and he says that it's important for the approval of the litigants to be expressed regarding the third judge as well. Notice how we've squiggled on the line Nami, indicating in addition to. That's being the unique feature of Rabbi Meir's opinion. Rabbanan Savri Das Hadinim Bo'inan, Das Bale Dinim Lo Bo'inan. As far as the choice of the third judge is concerned, it's true that we need the approval of the judges, but we don't need to have the approval of the litigants as well. Kufa, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, Ein Hu Edim Chos Mal Shtar V'Chulei. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav taught that witnesses will not sign unless they know who is signing along with them, as we mentioned before, so as to prevent a situation of embarrassment. Tanya Nami Hochi, we have a Tanaic source that bears this out as well. Kachoyu Niki Hadas Yerushalayim Oisin, the pious ones, the special ones of Yerushalayim, there were special people in Yerushalayim that practiced certain acts of righteousness and extra sensitivity, and they did. They practiced as follows: they would not sign documents unless they knew who was signing along with them. And they would not sit in judgment unless they knew who the fellow judges that were sitting with them. And likewise, they would not sit together at a meal unless they knew who was eating along with them. Ze poisil dayono v'chulei. And we saw in Rashi that meant that each party can say, I don't want to be judged by this dayan. The Gemara asks, kol kamine de poisil dayoni? Does one have such strength to say such a thing that he refuses to be judged by so-and-so? Om Rabbi Yochanan, Perakoy Shibasuria Shanu. Avo Mumchen Lo. This option of refusal is only the case when dealing with unprofessional courts. Unprofessional courts, namely those courts that are not expert in Din Torah. However, if you're dealing with Mumchen, and we've dashed underlined this expression, this will be the focus of the oncoming Gemara, when dealing with professionals, with experts in Torah law, this option does not exist. As we go on in the Gemara, we encounter another series of geometric forms. In this case, we have diamonds with colored in tops, indicating a new series, not to be confused with the appearance of diamonds earlier on the page. In the outside margin, we see the Nosei and Mivneh featured. Rabbi Yochanan Masbir, Hodim Rabbi Meir Ze Posel Dayono. Rabbi Yochanan here in our sugi is explaining that which we taught in the name of Rabbi Meir, that one is allowed to posel dayano, eino kolel lifsol mumchen. This doesn't include the idea of posseling or rendering unfit those who are expert. And we have the diamond, the use of the diamonds here are kushios. It's a series of questions. Al Rabbi Yochanan. So we begin. Ha midiktoni seifa. From the fact that the Seifa teaches as follows, V'chachomim omrim emosai, when is there a possibility of posel dayono? Bizman shemevi raya shen krovin opsulin. Only if you can bring evidence that the judge is a relative or unfit. Avol im hoyu ksherin o mumchin mepi bezdin. However, if they're kosher or they're expert, eino yochol poslan. He cannot render them unfit. That is the Chacham's opinion. So we can infer from that, Michlal, the Rabbi Meir, Savar, Mumchen, Nami, Komar, that Rabbi Meir would differ and say that even Mumchen are included in the option of rendering unfit on the part of the litigants, that the litigant can say so-and-so is unworthy to judge. And according to Rabbi Meir, just to emphasize the point, even if the judge being rendered unfit is a mumche. The Gemara answers, Hochi ko'omar. We're going to now have a restatement of what the Chachamim said. Aval im hoyu ksherim, if the judges are kosher, even though they are yoshvei kronos, even though they are not expert, nasu kemumchen mipi bezin. Since they're kosher, they are considered as if they're expert. We squiggle underline the word chof because that's the emphasis of this rereading. These yoshvei kronos are like expert mipi bezdin, the eino yochol lefoslan. And on this point, Rabbi Meir would disagree that by the mere fact that they're kosher, I am not going to view them as if they're a mumchen. But real mumchen, like Rabbi Yochanan said, cannot be posseled by the litigants. Toshma, Amrulo, the Rabbi Meir, Lo kol himenu shepoisel dayon shemumche l'rabim. The source features that Rabbi Meir was addressed, and they seem to take issue with Rabbi Meir and says it's not within the power of a litigant to passel a dayan that is expert to the public. From this, one can infer that Rabbi Meir's own opinion is that the litigant can passel even someone who is expert, and once again, that would be not like Rabbi Yochanan. The Gemara says we must restate this. Emo, restated as follows: Lo kol heimenu shepoisel dayon shehimchuhu rabim alehem. The Chachomim's approach is that it's not within the realm of the power of the litigant to render unfit someone that the public accepted on themselves as if he were expert. But we're not dealing with an actual expert, because dealing with an actual expert, everyone would agree that the litigant cannot render him unfit, as Rabbi Yochanan taught. Tanyo nami hochi. We now will present a Tanaic source to support Rabbi Yochanan's contention that in a real mumcha, dealing with a real expert, Rabbi Meir will concede that the litigant cannot passel him. Le'olam poisel v'holech ad shekabel olof beizdin shemumcha l'rabim, divrei Rabbi Meir. The power to render unfit continues until you have a situation of an expert based in sitting in judgment. Let's take a look at Rashi. Ad shikabel of bifnei bezin mumche, amo bemumchin moide Rabbi Meir. So we see from here that in the case of actual professionals, Rabbi Meir concedes, then there is no more rendering unfit. The Gemara asks, Ha edim kemumchin domi. Two witnesses have the same status as mumchin, meaning they're an established official entity. And if they're not korov or apostle, if they're not relatives or unfit, they have the status of mumchin, the Omar Rabbi Meir. And nevertheless, we see Rabbi Meir saying the following. Ze poisel edov shel ze, ze poisel edov shel ze. That each side, each litigant, can passel, can render unfit the witnesses of the other. So we see here, and we've also dashed underlined the expression posel, the word posel, indicating the main objection to Rabbi Yochanan. Borrowing from the idea of edim, we see that mumchin can be rendered unfit by the litigants. The Gemara says, "O itmar alo amar Reish Lakish." It was said concerning this by Reish Lakish, "Pe kadosh yoimar dover ze." Could it be that such a holy mouth, namely Rabbi Meir, would say such a thing that a litigant can render unfit the two witnesses of the other party? To me, a do. You must restate the source to mean singular witness, that namely ze posel edo shel ze, but not to read it as if the litigant can posel the two witnesses of the other party. And with this we would have a defense of Rabbi Yochanan's opinion that two witnesses would have the din of mumchin. They have the same power as being an official legal institution, just like a basin shel mumchin, and cannot be rendered unfit by either litigant. With the markings, we will be able to navigate in the upcoming Gemara with much greater ease than otherwise. We have in front of us now a bracketed section, and this bracketed section lasts down Amud Bey's several lines to appreciate the length of this bracketed section. Just follow the dashed, dotted, vertical line that you see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. We also have a note in the margin, inside margin, with an asterisk, what the role of the bracketed section is and what it accomplishes for us. Achrei hasagrayim v'omid beis, following these brackets on Omid beis, HaGemara takshel Reish Lakish, the Gemara will raise an objection to Reish Lakish's answer. Namely, Reish Lakish wanted to reread the Mishnah as referring to singular witness, that the Mishnah, that Rabbi Meir says, ze posel edo, as opposed to the plural edov. So on that point, the Gemara will raise an objection on Amud Beis. We also have a note to notice the Rashi on Amud Beis, which is found by spotting an asterisk on Amud Beis, first narrow line, where the Gemara, where Rashi himself is very sensitive to the structure of the Gemara, at which point this Rashi, which is a commentary on the point of Gemara, after the brackets, Rashi says, "V'lesa l'dereish lakish." At that point in the Gemara, which we obviously have not gotten to yet, we will then say, like Rashi says, we will be holding in a position against Reish Lakish, v'hodra kushin l'duchta, and the question will come back, v'edim kemumchin damu, we will come back to the position holding that the Mishnah must be understood as referring to two witnesses, and yet you see Rabbi Meir holding that two witnesses can be rendered unfit, hence a kasha on Rabbi Yochanan, who said that that which has a status of mumche l'rabim cannot be rendered unfit. Before we pursue the Gemara itself, let us read a few words using the brackets as a skipping device. Reish Lakish just said Tani Edo. Restate the Mishnah as Edo. Now, if we skip the bracketed section, the Gemara asks, Ha Midiktani Reisha Dayono. After all, the Reisha of our Mishnah, from where this source is quoted, the Reisha says Dayono in the singular, the Seifa Edov, and the Seifa uses a plural expression when referring to the witnesses, Alma Davka Kotoni, from the fact that the Mishnah changes the singular and to plural. You see that the Mishnah is very exact in its wording, and hence when dealing with a dove, it's referring to two witnesses. And Rabbi Meir is saying, Zeposel a dove, that one litigant can possibly can render unfit the witnesses of so-and-so. So you see a situation where a litigant can passel that which has a status of mumcha, an expert status, and that presents a difficulty to Rabbi Yochanan. And we will wait till that point in the Gemara before we deal with the answer. Before that, though, let us now get into the bracketed section. At this point in the Gemara, we are still understanding things like Reish Lakish himself presented, that the Mishnah that said, in the name of Rabbi Meir, Zeh Posel Eidov Shelzeh, really means Zeh Posel Eido Shelzeh. That when it comes to a singular witness in Jewish law, on the surface of things, does not have the power of two witnesses, and hence we don't classify a singular witness as a mumche l'rabim. The Gemara asks, Eido Lamai, what is the singular witness appearing for? In our Mishnah, concerning whom we say that a litigant can passel him, we will be using the double underline as a series, and in this case, it formed the double underline with the dots in it to distinguish it from the previous use of a double underline. This will be a series of attempts to discover what is the role of the singular witness that we are passeling, that the litigants are passeling. And you'll notice the structure just by glancing at the highlighted words themselves. You have Ilema, E, and then Oilam. Three stages in the pursuit of this analysis. So we say Eido Lamai. The singular witness, what was he coming for? If he was coming to serve as witness that so-and-so owes money, and testifying that so-and-so owes money, and his role was there to rule upon his testimony, and thereby require one of the parties to pay to the other, that's not true. Rachmana Pasli, the Torah already renders him unfit. I don't need the litigant, and hence that which is taught in our Mishnah to teach me that he is puzzle. He is puzzled by virtue of the fact that he's a singular witness according to Torah law. e lishvua, if the role of the witness is to force an oath on the part of the other party, namely, a singular witness comes and claims and testifies that the other litigant is financially obligated to pay money. And if he denies it, if the borrower denies owing money in the face of the singular witness, the Torah requires him requires the borrower to swear to that effect that he does not owe the money. Therefore, e l'shivua hemune mehemon kebetrei, he has the status of two. The Torah imposes an oath under such circumstances, even if there's one witness that's testifying. And according to the way we're learning the sugya, Beitrei, everyone agrees, has a din of mumcha and cannot be rendered unfit. Le'olam le'mama. We're at the third stage, trying to understand what's the one witness doing over here. So we're talking about a case of a singular witness that's testifying about a debt that must be paid. But we said that he's already considered unfit by the Torah. Lo tzricha de'kible alei ke'beitrei. We're talking about a situation where the borrower accepted the testimony of the singular witness as if he were to. If that be the case, this borrower in our example is in effect saying, if the witness testifies that I am obligated to pay the money, then I will pay the money. And then, what is the Mishnah teaching? The Mishnah is teaching that ze posel edo shel ze, that he, the borrower, can turn around and say, I don't accept him anymore. Gemara continues. My komashumlon, so what is our Mishnah teaching us? The motzi hodarbe, that the litigant can back out, that after he accepted the singular witness on himself as binding, he can then say, I don't want to be bound by his testimony. Tanino, we have a Tanaic source that already supports this idea, and hence what would I need our Mishnah over here in the third parak of Sanhedrin to say the same thing that is taught elsewhere in a Tanaic source? This, by the way, is also going to be the beginning of a question that lasts several lines. It will last to the second line from the top, and that's indicated by the long question marking found to the immediate left hand side of the Gemara, the little kuf that's encircled with a dashed vertical line indicating its length, the length of the question. So the Gemara is asking, Tanina, we've learned this concept already, that in a situation where one accepts upon himself the ruling or the testimony or the verdict of someone who otherwise would not be allowed to either testify or judge, and after having accepted this imperfect judge or witness, he can then back out. The concept has already been taught, and we have it here in the following source, which features an issue concerning judges. Therefore, even though our topic is one concerning witnesses, we have a parallel topic concerning judges, and still we're going to be asking the question. There seems to be repetition. Amalo, a litigant says, Ne'emon olai abo, ne'emon olai oficho, ne'emonim olai shloshu roye boker. One of the litigants says, I accept upon myself dad as a judge, or I accept your father as a judge, or I accept upon myself the ruling of three cowboys, working with the assumption that cowboys, roe boker, are not acceptable to serve as judges. Rabbi Meir Omer Yochol Lachzer Bo, and we've dashed underlined this being the focus of our discussion. Rabbi Meir says that even though one of the parties accepted these unfit individuals to serve as a judge initially, they can back out. And the Chum say that once you accept it, you cannot back out. The Omar Rav Dimi Braid Rav Nachman Braid Rav Yosef Kigon the Kible Olei Bechad, that which the Mishnah taught concerning judges, where someone said nem on alai abo, that is a case where he accepted dad as one of the judges when there were two other kosher judges sitting in judgment. And Rabbi Meir teaches that in such a case, even though he accepted dad as a binding authority, he can nevertheless back out. Before we go on, let's glance at Rashi at the top. V'yomer Rav Dimi, ha dikatoni nem on alai abo, the case taught in the Mishnah where he says, I accept as trustworthy dad's ruling. Kigon dekibli alei b'chad dayan v'yesh shnayim ksherim imoi, that he accepted him as one dayan and that there are two kosher ones with him. Afilu hachi kibon deposim midoraisa, and even so, since dad is unfit from a Torah perspective, motzi hoderbei, he can back out. Ha-ha, nami, so too in the case of a singular witness, kima de chad lemomon lo miskusher, since a singular witness, when it comes to testimony concerning obligation to pay, is not acceptable, motzi hoderbei, the one who originally accepted him as binding, can back out. The question then is, what do I need this concept of backing out as being acceptable to be taught twice by Rabbi Meir? Tzricha. So the Gemara answers, I need it to be taught twice. Namely, that a person after accepting can back out, t'i tona abo v'avicho, if the case of dad, where he was makabel him as a singular judge, then the litigant can back out. Only in this case was it taught that after accepting him, he cannot back out. Because though the fathers are unfit in this case, they are fit to serve as judges with regard to other people. But in the case of witnesses, which was Rabbi Meir's din over here, the din of Rabbi Meir with witnesses, accepting one as if he were two, de la alma lo chazi, which in general is not fit, one witness is not fit in general, emo modu le Rabbi Meir. I would have thought that the Rabbonon would agree to Rabbi Meir that one can back out. V'i ashminan b'ha, and if I would have taught the case of the witnesses, where one witness is accepted as two, b'ha kam Rabbi Meir, maybe only here Rabbi Meir would say that there is a back out possibility. Avo b'hahi, in the case of avo v'avicha, emo modu l'hu l'rabbonan, maybe Rabbi Meir would have agreed with the Rabbonan that there is no back-out possibility. Tzricha. Therefore, it is necessary to teach the machlokis Rabbi Meir and the Chachomim, both in the case of witnesses, singular witness accepted as two, and the case of Abba or Avicha accepted as a judge. But as we see from our markings at this point in the Gemara, we turn back to not which was stated immediately before this, but rather to Reish Lakish's answer in defense of Rabbi Yochanan concerning the ability to pasul mumche. The Gemara asks, "Ha miktani reisha dayono?" From the fact that the reisha of the Mishnah, and we can use the arrow we see in the margin between the Gemara and the Tosis, namely to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara text, you notice an arrow indicating Omid Aleph. Try to find a parallel arrow on Omid Aleph, and you will if you look at the upper part of the page. At that point in the Mishnah, you saw the expression Zeh Posel Dayono, that one can render unfit the judge of so and so, and Dayono is an expression in the singular. So from the fact that the Mishnah in the Reisha used the word Dayono, the Seifa Eidov, and in the continuation of the Mishnah, you saw that regarding witnesses, it used the plural word, Alma Davka Kotani. Therefore, you cannot restate the language of the Mishnah, but it's taught rather Davka, meaning in a specific fashion, namely two witnesses. And yet the Mishnah said, according to Rabbi Meir, Zeh Posel Eidov Shel Zeh, that according to Rabbi Meir, two witnesses can be rendered unfit by the litigant. And that's contrary to Rabbi Yochanan's teaching. Rabbi Yochanan said that when dealing with a mumche l'rabim, one cannot passel them. Omar Rebbe Elozer. Rebbe Elozer explains Bebo hu v'acher l'poslon. There are two witnesses. In the Seifa of the Mishnah, and who are the two? The Baldin and the Love, namely the Baldin, who's the Love, the borrower, and someone else are coming to Pasel. In other words, when the Mishnah says Ze Posel Edov, we have the Baldin, the Love, the borrower, and someone else coming to render unfit to Pasel the witnesses of the lender. The Gemara says, how could that possibly be? Kol kamine? Is that within his power? Nogea be'edusahu. The Baldin, the borrower, has a vested interest. And we don't listen to people who have vested interests in a particular case. Of course, the borrower is interested in rendering unfit the witnesses of the lender. Omar of Acho Breder of Iko, Kegoin Shikoro Olov Aror. The case whereby the litigant and a fellow party and a second individual can together come and form a unit of two and thereby passel the witnesses of the lender. It's a case where the lender's witnesses were said to be psulim. That's the expression koro alav aror. Rashi uses the expression shemetz shel psul. Aror demai. What kind of problem? E lemo aror de gazlenusa. If the shemetz shel psul, if what the lender is saying along with a second party concerning, if what the borrower is saying concerning the witnesses of the lender is that those witnesses are thieves. That can't be. Kol kamine nogea be'edusahu. When the borrower is challenging the kashrus, the acceptability of the lender's witnesses by calling them thieves, by referring to them as thieves, He will not be believed. He, the borrower, has a vested interest, of course. Elo aror tepegam mishpacha. What the borrower is saying that the witnesses of the lender have a general problem, not a financial problem, in which we say he would not be believed, because under such circumstances he's called nogea be'edus, but rather he is making a general declaration about the fellow's background. And such a declaration is not a frontal challenge to the lender's witness, but rather a family description, and as a result of knowing about the gentleman's problematic background, he would then become unfit to testify. Rabbi Meir, before we go on, though, in the Gemara, let us take a look at the Rashi. A few lines up from here, it says, Shekoro olav aror, baldin omer lofaneinu, alma hu poislo, v'yesh achirimo. The borrower tells us what the problem with the lender's witnesses are, and he has someone testify along with him. Then we said that if he, the borrower, claims that the witnesses are thieves, we said he is not believed with such a claim because he has a vested interest in saving his money. However, if he says that the witnesses are problematic by way of their family background, There we have the Machlokes, Rabbi Meir, and the Chachamim. And let's continue in the Gemara. Rabbi Meir, Savar, Hani, Amishpocha, Komisidi, Ve'ihu, Memela, Koposil. What these guys are telling us are about the man's background. And they, as a result of our being informed of the witness's family background, they become, on their own, they become determined to be unfit to testify, and that kind of information is not viewed as nogea be'edus. In other words, one can say it's a sort of a general type of comment regarding the witness's family background, and it's as a result of that we're sort of taking the carpet from under his feet and the whole testimony falling apart. Rabbonon, however, Savri holds self nogea beidusuhu. In the final picture, though, even though it's not a direct challenge to their honesty, as would have been the case of testimony concerning them as testifying concerning the witnesses as being thieves, that everyone would agree is considered nogea beidus. But even here, the Rabbonon hold the fact that their testimony becomes unfit with this information, we see that the borrower is still working under the influence of his having a vested interest, and hence we do not believe them, and that's what the Rabbanan held in the Mishnah, that they cannot passel the lender's witnesses. As we go on in the Gemara, we encounter a new geometric form, and this requires us to explain what is going to happen. Let us glance at the outside margin, the Nosei Mivneh. Notice the bow tie form. Shnei Hezberim B'Shmosho Rabbi Yochanan. Two explanations, both under the name of Rabbi Yochanan. We'll first see Rav Dimi presenting Rabbi Yochanan, and then at the bottom of the page we'll see Ravin's presentation of Rabbi Yochanan. Masai Amrinon Ze Poisel Edov Shelze. Under what circumstances do we say that one can passel the witnesses of the other? In other words, we're going to try to further confine the parameters of controversy between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. Continuing in the Gemara, ki also Rav Dimi, Omar Rav Yochanan, machlokes b'shtei kitei edim. The machlokes between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim concerns a case where the Baal Din said to the court, I have two sets of witnesses that can prove my case, that can testify on my behalf. The Rabbi Meir, Savar, Tzorach Levarer. Rabbonon Savri, Eino, Tzorach Levarer. Before we go on, just take note of the double underline that we've used here, and also a few lines later. In both cases, we're going to use that to emphasize the names Rabbi Meir and the Chachomim. Where a litigant comes and claims, I have two witnesses. Rabbi Meir holds that by the fact that you offered this information, that makes you duty-bound to bring everything to the fore. Namely, if the fellow says, I have two sets of witnesses, we want to hear the testimony of both sets of witnesses. That's what's meant here by the expression Sorach Levarer. Before we go further in the Gemara, let us also take advantage of Rashi. Machlokes b'shtei kitei edim, she'omar baal din lefoneinu, yesh li shtei kitei edim b'dover zeh, hei v'kas rishona v'omar haloive v'acher v'omar psulin hein. So a lender brought his first set of witnesses after saying he has two sets of witnesses, and he brings his first set of witnesses in, and the borrower and his friend say they are unfit. Tehashto lav kenogea be'edus hu. At this point, the borrower even though he seems to have a vested interest, is not considered as such. He's not considered nogeh be'edus. Why is that? Sharei Omar Malve Yeshiesh Lo Kasacheres. Because this lender said he's got another set of witnesses. V'im Bikesh Velo Motza Yafsid. If that lender seeks out that second set and he cannot produce them, he will lose the case. Tikosova Rabbi Meir. Sorech Baldin Levarer Ulhamid Alo Emes called Dvorov. The Rabbi Meir is of the opinion that a litigant that says something, he's got to put his money where his mouth is, so to speak. Shetoyen Bebezin, whatever he says in Bezin, he has to verify it. Vahani Mifsili Af Li Adios Achiros. And these witnesses that were said to be puzzle are considered puzzle even regarding other testimonies. The imbike shumotza kasa cheres kshera, if the lender finds another set that are acceptable, afal pisha rishon and ipsala, even though the first ones were found to be unfit, hare bira dvorov, he nevertheless is establishing his original claim, shomar lohaviyam, vehevi, he said he would bring a second set in, and he brings them. V'hu lo dok, the sover shiksherim hoyu. And as far as the first set of witnesses is concerned, he simply wasn't that careful, thinking that they were kosher. The main point that must be emphasized, though, according to this approach in Rashi, even though Rashi brings another approach later on, Rabbi Meir holds that the borrower is able to passel the witnesses of the lender. Because of this rule that tzorech levarer, and since the lender said he had two sets of witnesses, the case was not dependent on the first set of witnesses. The welfare or the outcome of the case, as far as the borrower was concerned, was not fully dependent on the first set of witnesses. Hence, according to Rabbi Meir, the borrower was not considered to be nogea b'edus, and therefore he is believed to passel that first set of witnesses. Since, according to Rabbi Meir, the lender, tzorech levarer dvarav, he has to bring the second set of witnesses to the fore. Continuing in the Gemara, v'rabbonan sabri eino tzorech levarer. The Rabbonan, on the other hand, hold as follows, that even though a lender said, I have two sets of witnesses, if at a certain point he says, oh, I don't have another set of witnesses, and he has such an option, he can back out. He's eino tzorech levarer. He has an option of backing out from his original claim. Therefore, these would represent the only witnesses to the case, and as such, the borrower would be considered to be nogea beedus, because if he upsets these witnesses, there are no other witnesses that necessarily will be brought to the fore, and of course he has a vested interest in weakening this particular testimony. So as a result of holding this particular shita, eino tzorech levarer dvarav, that makes the borrower into nogea be'edus, and hence we would not be able to passel. And that's the case of the Mishnah, the case where the lender said he has two sets of witnesses. Continuing in the Gemara, aval bekas achas, if, however, you were dealing with a case where there was only one set of witnesses to testify on behalf of the lender, divrei hakol ein yochol leposlan, everyone would agree, even Rabbi Meir would agree, that the borrower would not be able to passel. Omru lefonov Rabbi Ami Reb Asi. We have a bracketed section that appears right here. The reason for the brackets is that which appears within the brackets is of a problematic textual nature. And hence, to appreciate the accurate reading of the Gemara, or the accurate question, one would skip the bracketed section initially to appreciate the question, and you would read as follows: Nimseis kas shnia kroivim opsulin mahu. What happens in a case where, after saying he has the lender claiming he has two sets of witnesses, and the borrower posseled the first set of witnesses, and the second set of witnesses was found to be unfit, hence there are no more witnesses? Is there no room to argue, possibly, that we see retroactively that the borrower had a vested interest, and hence he would not be allowed to posse the first set of witnesses? We'll go over this momentarily. Let's go back over the section of Gemara with the bracketed section, and we can also notice that through the markings, the length of the brackets was indicated by the vertical dash dotted line on the left to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, and onto the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, you notice the long question marking. So that at this point in the Gemara, Omru Lefonov, till the end of this of the shin dashed vertical line, this is all part of the question of the Gemara. Omru Lefonov, Rabbi Ami Ravasi. Rabbi Ami Ravasi raised a question to that which was said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Ein shom elo kas achas mahu. We've indicated number one, this is the first stage of trying to understand the question, what would be, according to Rabbi Meir, if there's only one set of witnesses? So to this, the Gemara reacts, Ein shom elo kas achas, v'amri safo b'kas achas divriya kol ein yochol lefoslan. Why would this be a question? It was already said by Rabbi Yochanan that if there were only one set of witnesses, then everyone agrees, even Rabbi Meir agrees, that the borrower cannot posel them because he's considered nogea b'edus. Elo, the proper understanding is nimseis kas shnia krovino posulin mahu. If the second set of witnesses that the lender brings in is found to be posel, in this case mamish posel, as Rashi indicates by the fact that two full-fledged witnesses came in and testified to their state of being unfit, how do we view the posseling on the part of the borrower of the first set of witnesses? Continuing now in the Gemara, we see a triangle, and this is because we have two versions of who is responding to this particular question. Omar Lohen, according to the first version, Rabbi Yochanan is answering, Kvar he'idu edim horishonim. That means that when the second set of witnesses was found to be posel, when the second set was found to be unfit, the original testimony concerning the first set of witnesses was accepted. Let us take a look at the Rashi in the wide lines. Kvar he'idu horishonim, kishanim seis kashni psula, kvar niskablo bekashrus eduson shel edu, shel elu hameiden al hapsul v'adayin lo hayo nogea be'edus. When the testimony concerning the first set of witnesses was stated, at that point there was thought to be a second set of witnesses existing, hence the original testimony concerning the first set of witnesses was said without a vested interest. And once it was accepted, the first set of witnesses are considered unfit, even though retroactively it would seem that the borrower was testifying from the vantage point of having a vested interest, nevertheless, that is only the case now, but not it was not the case when he originally testified. The Gemara continues, Iko de Amri, Omer of Ashi, Kvar Heidu Edim Harishon. According to the second version, it's the same response, simply in this case it's under the name of Ashi as opposed to Rabbi Yochanan. The Gemara now tries to parallel the Machlokis, Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, to another Machlokis, Nemo Beplukto de Rabbi Verebi Shimon Ben Gamliel Komifugi, that the Machlokis that we just saw of Tzorech Levarer versus Ein Tzorech Levarer parallels the following Machlokis. Desanya. We have a Tanaic source dealing with a person who is occupying a piece of land, and he has been on this land for 3 years, and he claims that I have a document indicating you sold me the property, and in addition to the document, I've also been here for a period of 3 years. In general, if a person has been on the property for 3 years and using it as if he were an owner, and he has witnesses to that effect, it's not necessary for him to produce a document of sale, because it is thought that owners don't hold onto documents more than 3 years. In this particular case, the current machzik, the owner or occupier of the property, is claiming that in addition to the chazoka that he has, the evidence that he's been there for 3 years, he also has the original sale document. Habo lidoin b'shtar u'b'chazoka. Nidoin b'shtar, divrei Rebbe. According to Rebbe, he is expected to prove his case with the producing of the document. Rebbe Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, and if we skip the parentheses momentarily, says af b'chazoka, namely with either one, either with the shtar or with the chazoka. The section that was in brackets is a section involving a problematic expression, and that we will see momentarily. So we'll read the Gemara now again. Rav Shmuel Omer, Nidon Bechazoka. A person claiming ownership of land, according to this reading, is he's judged or he proves his case with his chazoka, with his evidence of having been there for 3 years. And we ask, b'chazoka v'lo b'shtar, does that mean that he has to bring evidence through his being there for 3 years and the shtar would not be effective? We know that the evidence of being there for 3 years is only effective had there been a shtar there in the first place, had there been a document in the first place, whereby if a person comes along and says, I own this land because I've been here for 3 years and no one said anything to me, that would have no value. The only time the comment and testimony concerning his being there for 3 years has any value is when he says, I bought this property from you and I had a document and I've also been here for 3 years and I don't have the document anymore. That would be legitimate. So it can't be that Rav Shmuel Gamliel is saying that we would opt to listen to his testimony based on chazoka and not the shtar. Therefore, Elo Emo rather state as follows, Af b'chazoka, according to Shmuel Gamliel, even though the occupier says he has a shtar, and in addition to the shtar, he also has a chazoka, he has the option of proving his being there with the chazoka alone. V'kaimalon b'tzorach levarer pligi. And we understand that the machlokas between Rebbe and Rav Shmuel Gamliel concerns this topic of having to clarify and prove everything that one said. What would come out then, according to Rebbe, he cannot fall back on the chazoka once he says he has a shtar. Namely, he has to stand by his original word, namely his claim that he has a shtar. The Gemara now says, Loi, we're not going to parallel the machlokis between Rabbi Meir and the Chachomim to this machlokis, Rabbi and Rosh Hashanah Leo. As far as that particular opinion is concerned, everyone agrees that ein sorach levara, that a person doesn't have to bring to the fore everything he said. Namely, if Rav Shimon Gamliel is giving the option of having him prove his case by the chazaka alone, it's clear to us that Rav Shimon Gamliel is of the opinion ein sorach levara. Ki pligi aliba de Rebbe. Within Shitas Rebbe, we will see Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim arguing. The Rabbi Meir, Kerebi, just like Rebbe said, one who claims he has a shtar and a chazaka, he must bring to the fore everything he claimed. So too, Rabbi Meir is of the opinion, someone who came in and said, I have two sets of witnesses, he has to bring into the fore everything that he said. And as a result of that particular shita, the reality of the two sets of witnesses made it such that the borrower was not nogea be'edus when he tried to passel the first set of witnesses. Because as far as we were concerned, the reality was that there is another set of witnesses that will be brought in. And as a result of that, he could say that the first set of witnesses is possible, knowing full well that he'll still be found guilty by the second set of witnesses. V'rabbonon amriloch, Rabbonon will tell you as follows, Ad kan lo koma rebi hosam elo b'chazoka demikoch shtora kosi. It's only in the case of the shtar and the chazoka that Rebbe holds you have to bring everything to the fore, namely, that even though you claimed you had a chazoka, once you claim you have a shtar, you have to produce the shtar, because the chazaka derives its legal significance only by virtue of the fact that there was a shtar there initially. So that when you have an ikur and a tofel, and you claimed you still have the ikur, you still have the main instrument, so you have to bring it to the fore. Aval hocha. But in the case of the man who claims he has two sets of witnesses, the lender who claims he has two sets of witnesses, dahani edim lav mikoach edim achrini kosu, we do not say that the second set of witnesses is an outgrowth of the first set of witnesses. In other words, one is not ikur and one is tofel. Afilu Rebbe moida de ein sorach levarer. Even Rebbe would agree that the lender who originally claims he has two sets of witnesses, he has the option of backing out and saying, no, I only have one set of witnesses, and in light of that, the borrower is considered nogea be'edus, because as far as he is concerned, the reality of the situation is that there's only one set of witnesses, and as a result of that, he, the borrower, is nogea be'edus. With that, we complete our shiur for today.